And this is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Karnas.
I'm Kyle Kellums. A little over a week ago, you talked to Peter Coyote.
Right.
The actor, the narrator, the Buddhist priest.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a little bit of everything. Right. He was very active in the counterculture community also in the 1960s and 70s, which I just find very interesting. He has some pretty wild stories.
Yeah. He was a visiting scholar at the University of Arkansas for a week, spoke to many classes. Mm-hmm. He came to KUAF. He delivered a talk during his time here at the Fayetteville Public Library. But you sat down and talked to him for over half an hour?
Right, about 45 minutes. And I could have talked with him for hours. But I let him keep his voice, you know, rest his voice and only talk to him for 45 minutes.
Now, we don't hear all of that today, but we hear some of it.
That's right. And in this portion, he does. He talks about Ken Burns working. He's a documentary film narrator and a lot of other things. But he started talking about E.T., the 1982 film that I grew up watching, in the 80s. And he said this role was really a lucky break for him.
Every kid in the world has seen it, and but it's funny, even being in a movie that big, I was out of work for a year after that movie broke. That movie made $385 million domestically, and not one of those actors has ever been rehired by Steven Spielberg. We went to a 20th anniversary together, and just the actors were together eating at a lunch that was set up for us. And the boy who played Henry Thomas's older brother is working for the post office in Phoenix. So you look at that and you say, well, let's look at this glamour of celebrity. I was in one of the biggest films of all time, mm-hmm. and that was not enough to win me re-employment. Mm-hmm. And yeah. Once that film ends, I'm out of work.
I mean, it's the classic one-hit wonder.
Yeah. Well, I've been lucky. I've done a number of hits. Mm-hmm. But even so, when that film is over, you're out of work. Mm-hmm. There have been a couple directors that have hired me back for lots and lots of stuff. But, you know, I think if I were a director, I would want to repay some of the loyalty and some of the gratitude. Now, to his credit, Steven Spielberg sent me a $10,000 thank you check when E.T. got big, and that was really unexpected and really classy and generous of him. But how long does $10,000 last?
Well, yeah, and you compare it, I'm thinking you said $10,000 and then you just said $385 million.
Yeah. So, well, I don't blame him for making the money. It was his idea. He put it together. He told the story in a brilliant way. But he couldn't tell the story without actors. Doesn't have to be me, but he needs actors. So why not support the actors? Mm-hmm. Why not hire some of those people back? You got to use somebody. So I find that that's true a lot in the industry, that everybody's kind of looking for their own chance. And nobody considers that when they talk about celebrities. What is a celebrity? Celebrity is somebody who's famous for something. Sometimes it's just being famous for being famous. You know, Kim Kardashian. What does she do? Does she feed the hungry? You know, does she cure cancer? I mean, what does she do? She got big boobs.
She's married to Kanye West.
Yeah. What's he do?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't pay too much attention to it. Mm-hmm. And more often than not, sometimes it can be a gift. Sometimes it can be a gift you can share with people. It makes them feel really good. And sometimes you can use it to shine a light on something that you'd like to talk about. But most of the time, it means you go into a restaurant and out of the corner of your eye, you see people covering their mouth and saying to somebody, don't look, don't look. But who's that over there? Who's that? And you can't not see it. It's going on all around you. Or you have, as happened to me one night, I was in a restaurant with my first wife. We were having a really tough time. She was crying and in tears. And I looked over my left shoulder, and there's a big old big-haired woman holding a pad and a pencil, crouching and grinning like she wanted an autograph. And I said to her, are you crazy? Take a look at my wife, why don't you? You think I'm going to stop and give you an autograph?
While I'm eating dinner, yeah.
Yeah. She was offended. So that comes along with celebrity, mm-hmm. too. If it's so good, how come everybody's getting divorced or in rehab, you know, doing foolish stuff? It's not an easy life.
Mm-mm. Well, your voice is quite famous. I mean, it's a celebrity in its own. Yeah, I mean, you're just recently the voice of the Ken Burns Roosevelts.
Yep.
Do people recognize your voice?
More often than they recognize me. Mm-hmm. I joke with them that it killed my career as a bank robber. I just imagine going into a bank with a mask and getting some money for my retirement. And when I leave, the teller said, yeah, Peter Coyote was in here in a blue mask. So that's been a lovely gift. And certainly working with Ken Burns has been delicious. I'm taking my raggedy voice up to New York in 3 or 4 days, and we're going to start a new 18-hour series on Vietnam. So I prefer to do that, actually, because my great love and the place that I really live is writing. And, you know, I was a writer who made a living as an actor because I didn't start working in civilian life till I was 39 years old. And I had to put my kids through school and buy a house and give them a life. You know, the communes were over. So I've done that, but I'm done with it. And the voiceovers actually give me an income and learning, and I get to propagate issues and ideas that are important to me. So I'm really grateful for that.
Well, you say, you know, that's a learning. You get to learn from these opportunities. How much research do you do before you are the voice of something like an 18-hour series on the Vietnam War? Or is Ken Burns' script, you know, you're studying up?
Ken Burns is the researcher. There's a funny story. When we met, he wanted me to do this 8 or 9 hour series on the national parks. And we met, and he had a big box of DVDs, you know, rough cuts and scripts and stuff. And he said, well, I'll send you these, and you can work them over and get your pre-work. And I said, well, no, I don't ever read it till I get in the studio. And he turned a little white, and he just looked at me, and he said, well, that will never work. You don't understand how impeccable I am. And he is impeccable. He is, that's the best word for Ken, is impeccable. But I must have drank some brat juice that day or something, because I said, well, you don't know how good I am. And there was another little face-off. And he said, well, all right, I'll book a studio for a month and we'll do. I said, no. 9 hours, we'll do an episode and a half a day. We'll be out of there in 6 days. And we did. And that was the beginning of a fabulous relationship, because what he said to me was, he said, oh, my God, I can work you as hard as I want. And it makes him really happy, because, you know, sometimes you reach the limit of a person's ability and you can flog them to death, but they just can't do it. But we've never found each other's limits yet. Mm-hmm. And we have a lot of fun, and there's something about my love of reading that carries me into those scripts. And by reading it the first time, fresh, I get really clear images. And those images generate feelings, and that feeling comes out my voice. And if I polish it to death, if I do too much work and try for effects and things like that, it disappears. So, you know, I read so much, and I have really wide peripheral vision. I can see a comma coming. I can see a period coming. And in about 2 sentences, 3 sentences, I get the rhythm of the writer. And we just sail on. Most of the time what he corrects me about is music. I tend to go up when I give lists. Like I'll say, there was a microphone and a keyboard and a picture of her baby and a mouse and a phone on her desk. And Ken will say, no. He wants, there was a microphone, a mouse, a keyboard, a picture of her baby, and a phone on the desk.
I hear the difference.
Right. Mm-hmm. Just the facts, man. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a Jew. I'm minor key people. So we laugh about it.
Well, I see myself doing that, too, when I'm reading things. Yeah,
uh-huh.
Yeah, for sure.
So I'll read 2 pages, and he'll stop me and say, you went up on butt. Mm-hmm. But that's his ear, you know. And he's one of the most musical men I've ever known. I don't think he's a musician at all. But his choices of music and his sense of the music of the dialogue is actually extraordinary.
Well, one last question I know, and this one I guess kind of goes to father, being a father and being mother. We're going back to that a little bit, but and back to your being such a very interesting, having varied interests and multifaceted guy. You know, I'm a mom, new mom. Mm-hmm. I'm 33 years old. I am trying to work. I'm trying to exercise. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to balance my own love for reading and learning and traveling. What advice do you have for me trying to, you know, kind of do it all?
Take 20 minutes a day and meditate. Mm-hmm. Take 20 minutes a day and sit in front of a blank wall and a chair, relax, put your hands in your lap, let your stomach pooch out, tip your chin down a little so the back of your neck gets long, and just sit there with your breath, pay attention to it, sort of follow your exhales. And when you do that, you're taking a certain amount of energy away from your thoughts. It puts a distance between you and your thoughts, so you can actually see your thoughts without being hooked by them. Instead of saying, if she ever says that to me again, I will slap her. You see that and you'll go, wow, I'm really angry. And that thinking about what you're feeling and observing it actually frees you from being tugged left and right. And if you do that, it will kind of open up a sense of spaciousness inside. You'll kind of get different ideas about time, you know, all of our problems only happen because we're alive. And we don't want to forget the preciousness of being alive. We wouldn't have stress. We wouldn't be running and worrying if we weren't alive. So that's something I've done for 40 years. And it's hard to believe that something that simple is so radically effective. The other thing that I think that you can do, which I know you do because I've known you now for a couple days, is to just take a little time and think about your priorities. You know, if you buy a new car that's going to be expensive to repair, you're committing yourself to so many more hours of work. You're committing yourself to time that's not going to be available for just cuddling with your baby or your husband. And it's sometimes hard to hold all that stuff together when we're young because, you know, you want to be the best that you can be and we want to do it all. Well, the truth is it's kind of a lie of American advertising.
We're going back. Yeah.
We can't do it all. Mm-hmm. So what you have to do is decide what's really important to me. There's no way to see yourself objectively. You can't live life like you were a scientific experiment watching yourself. And, you know, I'm wearing these kind of clothes. This means I'm this kind of sophisticate and this kind of ink. That's not the way we experience life. We experience our life from the inside. And that's what meditating gives you uninterrupted time to do every day. How am I feeling? What's up in my mind? And you might not even know. And you might even not know how busy your mind is until you sit for 20 minutes. And don't try to stop it. Just let it go. Let your stories come up, your little narratives, what mommy said when I was six. They'll get bored. They'll fall away. And little by little, you'll find that you have much more space and order and control of your life. So if you don't wear the newest shoes or the hippest watch, and you have a little more time with your babies, to me, I would much rather be an invisible nugget of gold resting on the bottom of a creek bed, just sending out light, than I would be up there in the frothy white water where everybody can see me and, you know, I'm just in the muddle. And it takes a certain amount of courage to go your own way and say, you know something, I'm made by the same thing that made hummingbirds and sunsets and butterflies and shooting stars. I have never been separate from this universe, not for an instant. I've never been separate from oxygen, from sunlight, from water, from microbes in the soil. It's only on one way of looking that I'm a little separate individual. On another way, I'm connected to all of it. And if you look at that, the invisible ways in which you're connected to all of it, it'll give you a lot of confidence and a lot of patience and a lot of stuff to say, well, that fashion's going to change next year. What do I care if I do it now or not? That's everything I know, Christina.
Well, thank you, Peter. I appreciate your sharing it with me.
Sure. I hope it's helpful.
Yeah.
You talked to Peter Coyote during his week-long stay, or more than a little bit more than a week, perhaps, in Northwest Arkansas. He came by the Carver Center for Public Radio, and you had that conversation. We're going to hear more from that.
Right. We'll hear a little bit more, about 15 minutes or so, another 15 minutes or so on Memorial Day. So that'll be around 2 weeks from now. But until then, if you'd like to find out more about Peter Coyote, he's also an author. He has a new book, a memoir. You can go to his website, petercoyote.com.
And you got to talk to him. That particular day is when Antoinette and I were hosting the show, so I didn't really get to talk to him. But he was talking to some other people after the interview.
Mm-hmm.
And I just closed my eyes, and I imagined everything he was saying was a letter from Teddy Roosevelt to a relative, because I had just finished watching The Roosevelts by Ken Burns. If you've watched those documentaries like National Parks, you instantly recognize his voice.
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. I mean, it's a familiar voice. I think even if you haven't watched, you know, a Ken Burns documentary, he's the narrator of a lot of other things, especially on PBS. So his voice is very recognizable.